Gaither is here also.
I know Jamie's on his way.
Yeah.
Swanson, Clark County Environmental Services. Brent Davis, Clark County Environmental Services.
Great. Just a reminder that the meeting is being recorded and the audio will be posted to the DEEB website. Next up will be to review and adopt the minutes, and I will take a motion.
Motion to approve adoption of minutes.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? None seen. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? No abstentions? All right, moving on. To review, let the record show that Jamie's finally here. Quite all right. Let's see. Review upcoming events. Greg, if you want to walk us through
upcoming
that.
Events, we have three work sessions of the Board of Clark County Commissioners in July, beginning with the SEPA process this next Wednesday, July 16th, 9:30 a.m. The following week is a work session on the budget and economic outlook, Wednesday, July 23rd, 10:30 a.m. And then July 30th, 9 a.m., we have the Clean Water Commission annual report presentation. On the Planning Commission, two work sessions, one hearing. The first work session, the Shoreline Master Plan Limited Update. That's actually this evening, Thursday, July 10th, 5:30 p.m. Another work session, Environmental Assessment Scope Summary, Thursday, July 17th, 5:30 p.m. And then finally, a public or Planning Commission hearing, Shoreline Master Plan Limited Amendment, Concurrency Code and Capital Facilities Plan Updates, Thursday, July 17th, 6:30.
Great. Anybody from staff tell us what the SEPA process issue is, what the work session is about on that? I thought everything had been resolved or worked out with updating for SEPA. Susan, I'm looking at you.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. Sorry.
So I had something different on my calendar for that same meeting. I'm just verifying. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was the SEPA process associated with the comprehensive plan change. And let me verify, because I had it on my calendar.
That would make sense.
I believe that's the case. The county is going out for a proposal for a non-factory.
Yeah.
So that's they're going to do an EIS.
Okay.
SEPA process for the comprehensive plan.
Good.
9:30.
Thank you. And then, does anybody know what the Shoreline Master Plan Limited update consists of?
I do know a little bit about that. There's four items I think on the list, and a couple of them have been from recent issues we've had implementing the master program. They are pretty limited, but I can't go through what each.
No, specifics, okay.
Yeah.
Mike, I could shed a little light on
that. Oh, that'd be great, yeah.
One is Cardi Lake, which is a great spill. It was not included in the original shoreline adoption, and it apparently needs to be part of that adoption process. So Cardi Lake is being added to the shoreline program. The other one is very minor. It's on dredging, and it's regarding distinguishment between dredging and mining, which is a small little sentence being added. And there was a third one on commercial, non-water-oriented commercial activity. They're very, very much.
Okay, so nothing substantial.
Nothing substantial.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I did have a question on the environmental assessment scope summary. I don't know what that is.
Rod, Brent, anyone? Okay.
That's the Planning Commission?
That's the Planning Commission work session. I mean, it's early in the process, but it'd be interesting to see what that would be about. So if somebody could find out and let us know, that would be appreciated.
I'll follow up on that one.
Great, thank you. All right. Any correspondences? I didn't see any in our packets, so I'm assuming that we don't have any correspondences. Move on to DEEB member announcements. Anybody have anything to announce? I have one item. I just found out today that Randy Prince has worked out with staff the issue associated with the double charging of erosion control and inspection fees, I believe, from early grading permits and then also working into actual construction. There was apparently an issue with duplicate fees, essentially, and the same fees being paid when construction gets underway that had already been paid when an early grading permit was issued. He's taking that up with the higher-ups and has apparently got that resolved, so that was all good news. I'd heard some rumblings about that, and people were... Eric, maybe you knew something about that, too. But
I know Jason in our office was talking to you about it, right?
Yeah, so...
I know we dealt with it on that particular job.
I know there's... There's some concerns on the early grading, and, I mean, our intent is to just... You know, be have the fee assessed on whatever new ground is disturbed. I mean, sometimes it can get a little confusing if these projects get phased, you know, go early stages and these sorts of things. So I think the clarification's been settled, though, as in even though a project is phased or staged in some fashion, an applicant would pay the initial fee. You know, I guess there's a base fee, you know, starting with that, and then whatever, just simply whatever acres disturbed. So we kind of defaulted to kind of a simplified scenario of that. Let's say we've got a 10-acre site going to develop just the first 2 acres on an early grading. So a base fee would be assessed for that and paid, and then just the 2 acres land disturbed. Let's say 3-6 months later they come in, the applicant comes in, they're going to finish the remaining 8 acres. They just pay on the disturbed 8 acres.
Okay.
Done.
Good.
So it should be the equivalent as though the project had not had an early grading. You just go into final grading, you do the whole 10 acres. It should be, you know, the net effect should be equivalent to that.
So. Okay. Great. Anything else? All right, next up, Jamie, residential impact fee delays. I will switch spots with you.
So today happens to be like the craziest day of my year of practice.
Even worse than yesterday? Or Tuesday?
Yeah, worse than yesterday. It's many positive things, but I've got 65,000 things going on. I'm giving this presentation and the BIA Grant Home starts tonight.
Wow.
Our firm is...
Thanks for being here.
Lead sponsor.
We appreciate it.
Yeah. But this is a really important topic. I'll speak briefly to the genesis of this while Rosie goes and gets removed. This started with a discussion that Marty and myself and Ably and Scarpelli at the BIA had in regards to what potential economic incentives we could look to giving the home building industry, given the fact that we were doing fee waivers for industrial and commercial projects. And the concept that came up was the idea of doing impact fee deferrals for traffic impact fees and park impact fees as an initial start, but then potentially looking at growing the program into other avenues. So what we started to do was to look around the state at various programs out there, determine how successful they've been, because I know that there's been many concerns in this regard, especially from title companies. And I think we found some pretty good solutions, which I'll present here. There were some statewide attempts in Washington. Back in 2013, there was House Bill 1652 and Senate Bill 5644. And I have these hyperlinks if anybody wants to pull up any of the documents. It'll be a lot of that throughout the presentation in case you want to look at something more in detail. And then, obviously, for your own perusal later. But essentially, there were these two bills, and they would have required local governments in the state of Washington to provide options to defer payment of impact fees. And under this legislation, there was two paths. The first way had a couple of elements. First, it would have required a recorded covenant against the property that would effectively serve as a lien on that property. Fees would be paid at, so typically fees are paid at the time of building permit issuance, but this covenant would be recorded against the property and the impact fee would be deferred until escrow at the time of closing on a lot or a unit, and the seller would not be obligated to pay unless there's some sort of agreement otherwise independent of the covenant. The seller was also under an affirmative obligation to disclose to the purchaser that this covenant is there. And once the fees are paid, the county or city was required to remove that immediately. There was a second path within that legislation that would have allowed for the deferral to occur up to final inspection or final occupancy. So what happened with this legislation? House Bill 1652 passed with strong bipartisan support, 83-11, with four seat absences. Here locally, we had Jim Moeller, Ed Orcutt, Liz Pike, Brandon Vick, Paul Harris, and Sharon Wiley as part of that 83. The bills then went over to the Senate where through legislation they worked out the differences between the two, and it was the House bill that was the one that moved forward. The Senate ended up passing the House bill with, again, strong bipartisan support, 34-14. One excuse, and we had local support from Senator Ben Rivers. But Governor Inslee vetoed it on May 21st, and he cited several reasons for his veto. Effectively, he thought that the bill benefited big builders rather than smaller regional and local home builders. He suggested in his vetoing and press conference when he did so that he would be amenable to having an impact fee deferral program statewide, but he wanted it to be targeted smaller, some sort of caps on the amount of units that would be capable of having that per jurisdiction per year. It was interesting to me that the Seattle Times, which isn't normally a bastion of being in favorable of the home building industry, ran an editorial that following weekend imploring the legislature to override the governor's veto. And for your own perusal of information, there's a link to that if you want to look at it. So what had happened in 2014, House Bill 2677 was introduced and Senate Bill 6461 was introduced. And these pieces of legislation attempted to directly address what Governor Inslee's concerns were with the 2013 legislation. They also allowed local governments to have a little bit more flexibility in adopting their own local programs as local seal of later on. But most importantly in this, it was limited to 30 building permits per year per jurisdiction annually.
Is that residential only?
Residential only. This House bill failed to get a floor vote. The Senate, probably a little bit more interesting, given the fact that it was under the majority coalition control this last year, it failed to make it out of committee. There's some interesting politics behind that. If you want to talk to me off the record, more than happy to do that, but probably not appropriate here to discuss. So what about 2015? I think there will likely be a bill back in the legislature to attempt to do this statewide. Right now, I know that the Building Industry Association of Washington is more concerned about inventory. So I think that while it will be there, it's less of a priority now. And obviously, this is an election year, so this could change the dynamics of what we might see from the legislature. So, the question is, have other local jurisdictions in the state of Washington attempted to adopted the Rural Program. And there are several local programs. And the one that Marty and I have sort of researched and keyed in on is Pierce County. So this is the one I want to talk a little bit about the most. But they had two ordinances that went into effect on January 1st, 2011. They were set to expire at the end of 2015. But from every indication that we're hearing from staff and politicians up there, it's likely to be extended because some of the concerns that were thought to that might arise haven't. This has been a very well received, good mechanics, great program. So what happens up in Pierce County is TIF is your voluntary, you have a voluntary lien, similar to state legislation, placed on your property until it's sold. But that lien can't exist no later than 2 years after the building permits are issued. So if you're a really bad builder and your house doesn't sell and it languishes there, you're still obligated to pay that 2 years after the issuance of the building permit. So that way the local jurisdiction is guaranteed to get their money. Pierce County also took a little bit of a different tack and they've applied this to sewer SPCs. And similarly speaking there's a voluntary lien placed on the property until the units are sold. But no later than 2 years after the building permits are issued. There's an interesting wrinkle here with Pierce County as well, as you'll note below, that does allow employers with over 25 FTEs to amortize sewer hookup fees over 15 years. So this is where they've gone with their economic development incentive program. I thought I would just bring this to our attention since when I was doing the research, it popped up to me. I know it's an interesting topic.
Yeah. We've already got some.
Yeah.
We don't require 25.
Oh, yeah. So we're
ahead. So here's some other steps state. Kitsap County has got one. So fees must be paid at final occupancy. This in Kitsap, it covers all impact fees. So SIF, TIF, and actually sewer SPCs. Olympia has a program that covers parks, transportation, schools. Again, that you're required to be paid at building permit at final occupancy. City of Redmond covers all impact fees. This one was interesting. Your fee is due at sheetrock inspection, so a little bit earlier than final. Renton has one that covers park, transportation, fire, and fire. It allows up to the sale or 18 months after the building permit issuance, so that a 2 year time frame goes down for 6 months. Woodland, here's one that's local, covers parks and fire. This one was kind of interesting. Until the development director determines that there's a demand for the materials that's actually in your code. So, and by the way, again, there's links to any of these if we want to go back and take more specific looks at the actual ordinances. And there's still more. Federal Way has a program that applies to all impact fees, and you're not required to pay until sale. City of Auburn. Kind of like this one a little bit. They have a waiver on TIF in a limited area. It doesn't just apply to job producing land uses, it also applies to residential. I think their theory there is they're trying to concentrate suburban revitalization in their downtown core. So they actually allow for TIF waiver there. And here's more specifics in their code. 1904 allows for deferral of TIF with a covenant at sale, but no later than 18 months. They have the same thing with schools, same thing with parks, same thing with fire. It's a little bit more expansive than what we've been discussing, right? Sammamish, another example, has a waiver covenant to do on sale. Marysville, this one allows for a deferral of schools. So they don't apply this one to TIFs, just specifically on SIFs. They allow the deferral of schools up to 25 units per year. Oh, and I'm sorry, they do have traffic there, but not park. Traffic there is also limited to 25 units per year. So more along the lines of that model that the governor and city has suggested. City of La Center has one at occupancy or sale or diplomas from the agreement. My understanding that there hasn't been a ton of usage of it since La Center adopted this posting market agreement. So what about here in Clark County? we've had something on the books for a while, and I confess I wasn't as familiar with this, and so Marty was the one that brought this to my attention. I know Susan's pitching for him today if we need it, but we'd like to key in to section 3 down there, and it talks about school impact fees being paid in two installments provided a developer signs and records the form that's acceptable to the county and the district's attorney, and you have to pay your first at normal issuance of the building permit, and then I think the second installment you pay prior to the transfer of the title at closing. My understanding that this program hasn't been used a lot, and I don't know whether that's just market condition or people not aware of it.
So Jimmy can give something to add.
So the way that's set up, when you're setting up basically a finance agreement, there's a little bit of paperwork involved, and it's for like 5 years. Is that the time limit? That's actually a state statute that they found, because we worked that through Dave a few years ago, and that's worked really well for commercial industrial when it's the same user over a long period of time. But when it's a home builder, really all they're looking to do is defer it a few months. Basically, so they don't have to finance it. That process is a little cumbersome, and I don't even think they're aware of it, where it really fits their needs for small builders who are looking to defer it less than a year.
Yeah. So. And I think that was Marty's. You know, I wish he was here today to explain more what his intent here was with this, but I think discussing he just wanted to demonstrate that Clark County has done something in this arena, so it wouldn't be unprecedented for us to suggest something to move to the Planning Commission or board before. So, without talking too much more specifics, why do we think it's good policy from the Building Industry Association? Financing for development has changed. Banks aren't funding development projects as if they're funding them at all. It's a very, very low amount. Most of the new norm right now is hard money with high interest rates. And so really every dollar that the builder has to go finance to pay impact fees, it's causing sort of a ripple effect, because you're not only having that included in the sale of the house, but you're also now also compensating for this higher interest rate than anything. Inventory is dwindling. I know it's a little bit counterintuitive due to the recession, but as I think we're all pretty well aware here, not a lot of flats went here in the recession, and most others are built out or building out. So whatever we can do to help facilitate getting more buildings up by reducing barriers, financing and fees, the better. And I think that the last thing is a really important one to underscore. And it still provides certainties to the governments, school districts who need to go with agreements, because it sets up time frame and procedures for when this stuff gets paid. So I know that there had been a lot of, I think, fear amongst people that, well, we're just benefiting builders and they're going to shirk their duty to pay this. I think that that's the reason for the covenants. It provides that assurance that stuff will get done. So, with that, I'd just kind of like to open it up to questions.
So are you and Marty working on something locally here that would mirror what was originally proposed at the legislative level? Or are you just kind of giving us some background information pending more potential legislation that might be forthcoming?
No, I think what we would like to do, I think from the Building Industry Association perspective, is propose a program to move forward here locally, understanding that even if we get something on the books, there's still maybe legislation that mandates this. In some ways, it's getting ahead of the curve. But we think that it's good policy to have this in place. We think, knowing the politics of the schools, it's better to try it on the PIFs and TIFs initially, and if we're successful and have a demonstrated record of success that these things are getting paid, maybe think that alleviates a lot of the concerns that the school districts have, and we can go to them and demonstrate to them with actual evidence that, hey, their fears are sort of unwarranted. In particular, I know I've brought this issue up in the past to two school districts that are, you know, in the county's urban area that would be impacted by this, no pun intended. And Battleground is sort of the big hurdle, but I think that there's a new superintendent out there. I think, again, if we can demonstrate success here, we may be able to go get this applied to SIPs, which is really the biggest number.
The Kitsap County, it would be interesting to have like their experience as a part of this in terms of a big county, and what they found more of the numbers. Who supplied for that, their success rate. I think that getting back to that element of fear, which I think is probably the concern, and are the covenants backed by anything, or are they just a covenant? Is there any bonding, or is that?
Effectively, they operate as a lien, so the county doesn't receive funds, they could go foreclose on that lien. It has to be paid.
When did the lien get applied? At the time
of the building permit
or at the time of the plat? It makes a difference.
Yeah, it wouldn't be plat, because that's not what
they apply it at the time of plat, then a developer selling individual lots is going to have a lien on the property that he's trying to sell. That can create issues.
So they're due right now on building permit, so that's after the plat's recorded. So
that
would probably be, I would anticipate it being when they pull the building permit, they would record a document or maybe a promissory note or something. It doesn't have to necessarily be recorded. I wasn't quite sure what voluntary meant. Does that mean who? It's voluntary by who? The county? They could record it if they wanted to?
Yes.
Okay. It
depends on what jurisdiction it is, but that's the route that most of the cities and counties have gone with it.
I almost think they have to be consistent. The voluntary, I mean, you either have to record something every time that gets released upon closing, otherwise the title companies are not going to know if they need to pull it out of escrow or not, is my guess.
Well, is there ever a time though that a builder will just pay those fees and roll it into the cost of the house?
They could. And that'd be their choice then. I guess you don't have to be deferred.
That's
you can pay
what
it
I would think the voluntary part of this comes in, is like, you can either defer it or not.
Yeah. Where I see there being a problem, though, is if they're deferring them, and on two different deferrals, if they record a note on one and they don't another, then the title company, when they close that, how are they going to know whether they need to pull the TIF fees out at closing or not?
Here's the good thing about the presentation. There's examples that you cited, and some that probably work a little easier than others, less paperwork, smoother process, better collection rate, or less default rate. However you want to characterize it.
Yeah, and by no means was my presentation exhausted. There's even more out there, but you know, it sort of gets redundant after a while. I think to give a sampling of the spectrum of ones we've seen out there, including the two ones that are here locally. To Marty and I, again, having researched this sort of independently, we decided that we think Pierce County's program is the most successful, and based on the feedback that we have gotten from the jurisdiction and as well as the builders that are building there. Pierce is, we think we have a lot of building permits. This county, they've got way more than we do. So they've demonstrated success with their program.
How long has the program been in place?
It's been in place since 2011. So three years, and again, it says expire at the end of December, but it's likely to get extended.
So what you and Marty are talking about, would that then supersede what is currently in place, meaning the developer wouldn't have to put up money in escrow?
So they would essentially record
this
covenant
instead of putting up money.
That's correct.
Because that it's putting up money, it doesn't solve anything. Because you have to pay plus interest. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so again, there's no money out of pocket, so you know you're not financing those fees, which Jeff probably knows.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. It's a good deal.
Just
the only thing you pay for a single family residence and impact fees, and like when you go to pull, what's the check you have to write at the counter?
The check?
Yeah, the check.
It depends on what jurisdiction.
Yeah, in Clark County.
Clark County. Like, I think the total was like 25 or something like that. 20-25.
I seem to think that's about right. Check's out about right, I think. That's 25 total. That's everybody. You're collecting for
the sewer.
Yeah. And then you
have the sewer. The sewer is separate.
Sewer is separate.
That's not
we
sewer,
get you in.
Yeah, they get us to get in that. That's the school and park and, you know, the. So that's where the jurisdiction depends if you're battleground school district. That's probably more the battleground, you know.
So when you add the sewer in, it could approach 30 grand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a spending deal. But I think you'd want it at the time you pull building permits rather than the time you do, I don't know if we resolve that, rather than the time you do a plat.
Sure.
From a developer standpoint, but it's kind of up to the builder what they want to do. It's a big consideration, but you wouldn't want to put a blanket lien over the entire development to get multiple builders right.
No.
Be a mess.
Yeah.
It's a substantial thing. It's very true on you know, with hard lines, but that's a substantial savings if you're able to defer that until occupancy really would be the.
You know, at the end of the day, what it boils down to is affordable housing.
Yeah.
It makes housing more affordable or less affordable. It matters to the consumer. Yeah, that's why it makes miracle.
So I kind of, like, for next steps, I wanted to bring it to you guys' attention. Please feel free. I think we will get the version sent out electronically that has the links. You guys can use the program. But I'm kind of hoping for some direction to continue the discussions with Marty, and maybe we can come back with something to tackle code language for Clark County based on Pearson's program that we can potentially move forward to transmission.
Sounds like Jamie's looking for a motion.
Are you looking for a motion?
If you were to be looking for a motion, what would it look like?
Do you have it on a slide up there for Dan?
I think maybe the motion would be deemed supports. Exploring the concept further with Marty and Jamie to come back with more specific code language next time for presentation.
I would so move. You want me to repeat all that? I would move that deep support Jamie and Marty exploring this and coming back to or further and coming back to the more information on it.
Second?
Sure, second.
Any discussion?
Well, I think it has high merit, and I think there's examples that are very workable, and there's kind of seems to be the leading one, so I'm very much in favor.
Yeah, and I think it gives us a chance maybe to get ahead of the game in case the legislature does pass it. See, there is will there to do so.
And that's interesting that you should bring that up. Would this supersede anything if the legislature does happen to pass?
Well, so the legislature in both bills actually exempted out. If you had already adopted the program, there was already an exemption.
For what the inspections have already happened.
Yeah, and so in this way, if we elect not to do SIFs at this time, because we don't want to get into the political battle with the school districts, that way we could get that on the books, and the legislature then comes in and decides to throw SIFs into the equation. You know, that program would be protected. I mean, you could cut both ways with the industry, but
if the legislature is looking at something along the lines of 30 permits a year per jurisdiction, that's nothing missing.
Well, I think this is a starting point. I think there's tweaks and twists and turns to this thing. I'm very much in favor of starting the process. We can learn from what we've seen and make it better. That would be one of the things that we can make better.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having information on how they implemented that in Pierce County would help
help Chuck and Clark County on that process as well, understanding those mechanics about what does that mean? Because there's not only the ordinance, but how does it really work internally?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's why I wish Marty was here, because I think he's got a little bit more of the how it works on the county end. I'm coming out from the builder's perspective. So I think if we come back next month, we can cut all that.
I agree with Jeff. I mean, 30 is just, that's not going to be a lot of help for most that have run through that by March.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there's more implementation like that.
No, I think it's to me, I'm not really sure what his objective is. If it's really to punish the DR ordinance and send taxes and those guys in the world. No, those guys are hundreds and hundreds.
They have to be caught down. I think they probably wouldn't participate.
It is the fear factor. I mean, you see in Puget Sound, you see quantum projects where two master plans could come in, you have 6,000 housing units. Whether those are real or not over time is another question, but the scale up there is just completely different.
Yeah. I mean, we're a very partialized county. Unless you're cool enough to get a former farm and just much smaller projects. You know, I definitely attest to that from a builder's standpoint. I'm not sure the rest of us can attest to that from a builder's standpoint.
Yeah, I think that would strike me that you might want to explore would be talking to a couple banks. There are banks lending. And if banks lending on developments, and if banks lending on home building, and how they would look, if there was a lien, what priority would come in?
I would agree with that. That was one question that I had, is how does this affect financing on either end?
You might want to look at that. I think they probably wouldn't have a problem, but those aren't banks we have really squirrely if there's anything out there. So you might have to look at having that be second position or something like that.
Okay, well.
I just want to applaud you for this great presentation. I think it's well researched, actually informative and fully supportive.
Okay, appreciate that.
We got a motion on the table. Let's get the voting done. all in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? None seen. Any abstentions?
I'm abstaining since I brought it.
Very good. Thank you. Well done. Yeah, thank you, Jamie. Much appreciated.
So did I hear that you wanted to come back and follow up as early as next month?
I think next month.
That gives you enough time? And
I mean, we don't have any reason to delay that.
Okay.
Good.
All right.
Can you bring Marty with you next time?
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be
here. Yeah, don't bring Marty with us both.
All right, very good. The next item on the work list, on the agenda, we've got a really short agenda today, is to go over the work plan and set our priorities. We've had this list out here before. I think before we go there, I'd like to maybe hop into another item that was listed in our packet here, if anybody doesn't have any objections. It's what Eric has been working on with regards to the buildable lands and the percentages that are currently being used in the comp plan to identify the percentage of buildable lands that's being used for infrastructure. And I know that we got this email today. I don't know how many people have had a chance to look at it. I looked at it. Our office has been participating to a certain degree. So, Eric, I don't know if you want to take the floor and
sure.
Just give us a quick rundown of it and let us know what the next steps are going to be.
First, I apologize for the late notice. I've been
quite all right.
Busy trying to squeeze this in between other things. So we've been working with different consultants and are kind of bugging them even as early as this morning to get us some information back. This came out of the work sessions we've had with the board. I know Jamie's been participating. I've been there as well. And looking at the criteria used in the comp plan update and things that we've talked about here as well. And I think we even talked about it at one of our last meetings, that the 27% didn't really pass the sniff test, I guess. We thought that was low based on, without any real data supporting it, just knowing that that's the same number we've used. A lot of things have changed. We know there's been impacts for the stormwater ordinances, and we're still using the same 27%. So we brought that concern up. The commissioners, pretty much at the work session, said, you know, we want to use the most accurate data possible. Bring us some info. And the challenge we had with some of the info is the new stormwater ordinance, there's not a lot of projects that have gone under it yet. And I can tell you, just from our experience, we have a lot, and especially in the soils that we're talking about, we have a lot of examples where we have projects that we looked at, but they didn't move forward because it was cost prohibitive. So looking at the value of land, the amount that was taken, when there's still land out there that was under previous stormwater ordinances, they're going to that land instead. So it's those projects aren't happening. So either they're still vested under a previous ordinance in other jurisdictions outside of Clark County, or the ones that have moved forward tend to be in a little better soils, or at least the marginal soils. We had that map, and I do have it here. It was this a colored map that ASCE did that kind of showed the different soils. And what we're kind of looking at is the stuff in the red. So the stuff that has low rates, that are characterized as low, where LID doesn't really help you reduce the stormwater facility. With the new ordinance, there's an LID flow rate, and using the LID techniques will likely just address that, and you'll still have to do a stormwater facility on top of it to address the flow control standards. Those are kind of the examples we looked at. I went out to a few different consultants. Olson was one. Sterling provided a design. We went through the examples that we had. Some of them are real projects. Some of them are theoretical ones that we worked with the county on. Some of them were actually provided by the county during the code update. So we went through and on those exhibits, we did a calculation on infrastructure. And that's what's kind of listed here. And what we're kind of seeing is the examples that that are in here that there's exhibits for, the infrastructure percentages are 39%, 51%, 32%, and 35%. Then there's a few examples that were provided by Olson. And again, we have a 42%, we have a 25%, 32%, 34%. And Sterling provided one as well. And that one was 34%, but that wasn't even the new code. He did send something updated, and I think it ended up closer to about 39%.
Wow.
So. But what that says is 27% is likely low. And
likely?
Yeah. I'm being nice. So 33 to 35% is kind of my guess and where it should be based on what we're seeing. So it appears to be low. So, and that's kind of where we are. We haven't provided a formal letter yet to the commissioners. I don't know if we wanted to do that as the board. What I could do is I could take this data, package it up in a nice letter, and submit it to the board. I'll probably do that regardless because it was asked of me to do so, and they kind of said, you know, bring it back, bring it to Deeb, and bring it back. So,
a point on the comp plan, I think that's critical is this could have a significant bearing on the county's kind of overall comp plan update process by having correct assumptions built into it. There's the potential that there could be a perception that there is a large amount of surplus land because of the population this time around. And so this getting the infrastructure reduction correct will help deal with that on a logical basis to say this is actually what is experienced. The challenge really is the county will have to probably look at things on the vacant buildable lands piece to say, is there too much land, or does the boundary need to shrink? That's kind of one of those fundamental things that needs to be looked at in this update. And I think getting the numbers right is going to be important. We're just at the very beginning of that process, but that's one of the values of having that information correct.
Eric, when you go to the commissioners, with or without deep support, which we haven't gotten to yet, what do you intend on providing as far as evidence is concerned that can back this up? I know we have an email here, but will you need to provide the commissioners and long-range staff plans, reports, stamped letters? I mean, what do you think would be reasonable to provide them from an evidence standpoint that would lend solid support for changing that percentage?
You know, I think at least exhibits. I've tried to provide the exhibits on the projects we
have. And those are good, yeah.
And also, the Peter Tuck worked quite a bit, so I want to give him some credit. He provided, you know, four examples down here. Mm-hmm. What I'd probably like to do is get at least a PDF of those projects.
Yeah.
So we can attach something to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe a list of the assumptions, like what type of soils they're in. And the percentages here are, again, in soils that don't infiltrate well. So we're talking about projects in kind of this red zone.
Mm-hmm.
The tricky part is, in the green, 27% is fine. Yep. I mean, I can say there's no real adjustment for stormwater. But there's a huge difference between doing a project in the green to the yellow to the red on this map here. And the yellow is one where 27 to 30% is probably still in line. The mm-hmm. cost goes up, from my experience. These are soils where LID does work, and it can reduce the size of your facility. So what you do is, your cost for your facility is significantly higher in the yellow from the green, but you don't lose a lot of land. When you get into the red, you start losing significant land, and you have high groundwater. You tend to have these issues that make it challenging for any type of stormwater facility, not just LID, to work.
What do you think the red is then for infrastructure deduction?
The red is probably close to 35%.
And that's where most of the new land, the open land is. I mean, the yellows and greens are pretty well developed out.
They are, yeah. Yeah, you start getting into the battleground, Ridgefield areas, and that's where you start having those challenging soils. Ridgefield, however, and there's other little factors in there. So when I said it's likely low, there's a little bit more to it, and it's not as simple as it seems, because Ridgefield is not a phase one or a phase two.
Yes.
They're still technically under the old stormwater, so there's a lot of development. You hear like,
but this is county,
but it doesn't matter, because the county comp plan covers those cities as well, and their urban growth boundaries. So regardless, they're bringing land in for Ridgefield.
Here's what I ask for. It's simply the facts.
That's
not an analysis or a decision or a direction based on that information, but these are the facts. In the red zone, it's likely this. Yellow zone, likely this.
Mm-hmm.
The same. And some evidence to back that.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I was doing. And this is kind of a rough draft of where I am right now from the information we have. What I plan to do is kind of package this up with the information, with a few of the exhibits, list a few more of the assumptions, put it in a letter, and deliver it to staff and the commissioners. And what I expect is staff to kind of do their independent analysis. And I have a feeling I'll find something very similar. I don't think it's going to vary too much. Some of the examples are even staff's examples. So
would the end result be then to, and this kind of runs contrary to what you just said, to get them to change the percentage as in the assumed percentage in the comp plan, or to somehow have some other, because you're talking about just giving them the facts, but without some sort of request or at least
the
suggestion.
The request would be to consider this evidence, but I don't think it's this board's role to suggest a direction or a redirection on the decision making for the outcome. This is the proper and correct information to use for your decision. And the decision making process is important. I see that as the role of this board.
I think we could make a recommendation on that factor, saying that we think the most appropriate factor for the infrastructure deduction based on the information we have would be 33 to 35%.
And that's where I would think we would go. I mean, mm-hmm. we're not.
No, I'm not disagreeing with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that fully, but I'm suggesting, to Don's point, we don't suggest that they revise their urban growth boundary.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
There's an equation. I think what I was saying is really supportive of Eric in the sense of using the correct information for the vacant buildable lands model. I'm just saying the implication of having an under percentage is the perception of an oversupply of land. And the county needs to deal with that issue, and that could be a pretty challenging thing to do.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I guess maybe I misunderstood what
you're saying. And I misunderstood what you're saying, too.
Because I think the reality is we want the vacant buildable lands model to include the right number,
mm-hmm.
because that is critical to this process, because, I mean, essentially what's going to happen is every city gets an allocation. Every city has a base net amount of acreage, and that net acreage is based on assumptions. And this is one of them, 27%.
And I think we all agree on that. The commissioners have political considerations to weigh as well that we don't
So the thing that's always bothered me more than anything about the infrastructure deduction, and I know that the Whispering Pines subdivision is a great example of this, and I think that we can include the Hills at Round Lake and the Lavin's development out on 38th and Parker as part of this. But they never account for school and parkland that zaps out of residential inventory. So in both of those cases, the Hills at Round Lake, there was 11 acres out of a 90-acre site that were sold to the school. There was about 100 units lost due to that, because that was a PRD that we had designed sort of two options. Also enjoyed that. The Whispering Pines case, Mr. Holzinger had to dedicate park area, which is about 3% of total. Again, he lost probably 6, 7, 8 lots in there. And I know it may not be a huge number or the big thing, but I mean, when you start adding up non-identified sites for parks and schools, typically they get put where the residents are, and that comes right out of residential. So I'd like to raise the question with long-range staff if staff even accounted for that, and if not, can we include those as examples as well to staff for consideration?
That could otherwise skew the base percentage that we're establishing here. Okay. Or increase the percentage.
For whatever reason, I've been getting the sense from, we've had this conversation a couple times on presentations that Oliver's given. I'm not sure what our place is or isn't, but Oliver seems to be expressing a reluctancy to adjust the percentages now and wait until the next round, which is, a long time from now, 7 years, well, really
minimum.
And possibly more than that, and that's a lifetime we're going to be living with these percentages. That's going to be rough. So I don't know if it's just because he doesn't have the research and the facts, and so maybe this will help them do that. I think the
commissioners can do whatever they direct staff.
Absolutely.
If presented with overwhelming evidence that one of the basic assumptions that they are using is fly.
And I thought, dot. And it seems like it's a good time to do it in the sense that storm range rates are changing. I think it's an important thing to get right.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, sounds like Eric might be looking for a motion.
Yeah, and I guess what I'd like to do is draft this into a letter to submit to the commissioners. Mm-hmm. And instead of having Rosie do it, I have a lot of it together already. I'll draft it.
Okay.
I think I have some letterhead from previous letters. But what I do is I circulate it around just to make sure everyone agrees with it before we submit it, and we'll get it to the commissioners. And I'm not sure what their timing is on it. Do you have any idea, Jamie, when they would need this by? Oliver's not here, but
I know during the last hearing that we testified at, market factor, that they were looking to reconvene with some additional information within the next 4 to 6 weeks, and so it would be timely to get it to them sooner. I think that was about 2 weeks ago.
Would this then, are we premature then in lending our support to this until that letter comes out? And we have everything together?
I mean,
so I guess the motion for now would be to move forward on a recommendation based on the information in this packet, and a caveat would be to forward it around prior to submittal to the group.
So the motion just be that to have you put together a letter for circulation, and then we can do it via email. We can actually do the motion.
We can make a motion and vote via email. We've done that before.
Yeah. Just clarification. You started off by saying you didn't ask personally to provide documentation. Do you prefer to do this personally, or do you prefer to the board that is deep?
Well, I was asked personally as a representative from deep to do this. So regardless, since the commissioners asked me, I'm going to do it regardless because I'm going to provide the information. because if Deeb was mentioned as well, I would rather go through Deeb, but I need you guys all to agree and sign up on it as well. So.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a Deeb. Mm-hmm. I mean, the letter should definitely come from Deeb's.
Yeah, and I reached out to other companies here, and actually if anyone else would like to provide, if you guys want to provide something, Andrew, if you have something to do, if you have some projects, it'd be great to have as many examples with as broad support as possible.
I like the validity it adds when you have other different engineering groups that are tapped on that are all kind of showing the same basis. That, to me, that really helps.
Yeah. And you know, staff, it'd be great to have some information from them as well. And I imagine they'll look at it. And from the people I've talked to, they also thought 27 was a little bit low, but yeah, they're doing other things. They thought it was a little bit low as well. They're surprised it hadn't changed. But there's different departments, so you know.
Okay then.
All right. So is that a motion? Do we need a motion?
No. I think we need a motion at this point. I would think. No motion?
You have to create a motion? Just direction.
I think you just have...
It's direction.
Or support.
I think there's a consensus.
Okay. Sounds good. It's
great
for me.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that's wonderful. okay, back on to the agenda here for the Deeb work plans and priorities. I believe those are listed, have those in your packet here today. And really what it comes down to, excuse me, is identifying what else we want to review this year. We've come up with a number of ideas here, and I'm looking for my last list that I kind of list stuff out real quickly. You know, we're talking about, while we have this list, which is all-inclusive and has been around for like the last 7 or 8 years, some of those items, just to reiterate, are the 60-day permits, and I think that it appears that staff's working through, and I don't know, Susan, maybe you can answer this. Is there any, and I know that you're, Marty kind of put this onto your shoulders, have you, and I know that I was going to be involved with this, have you talked about getting together a group of consultants and going over the good and the bad and the ugly associated with these 60-day reviews, and second, making this, codifying it, making it permanent, because I know that it's still a pilot program?
Yeah, we never made the pilot program official and adopted code or adopted it as an official program. Marty had talked to me about either doing a lean process, and I'm not sure if that's the best process, or convening some sort of group to talk about options and things that are working and things that aren't working. Because I think from both sides, there are things that aren't working as well as they could be.
Mm-hmm.
And also adding new permit types and how we would do that. But that's as far as we've gotten.
Okay.
So.
Does it seem to be, big picture, does it seem to be going pretty well with these? It sounds like everybody's doing them. They can.
Yeah, we're getting a lot more than we were, for sure. Actually, I'm working on a report right now. If I don't know if we were talking about this. I apologize. Marty and I didn't even hardly talk before he left, so I'm not very prepared. But I'm working on a report right now to look at what kinds of specific projects we're doing and what kinds of issues that we're having. I know that there's a couple going through right now with flats, and that is definitely proposed having some issues.
Mm-hmm.
A few have been requested for CPs, and that's got some issues. So I'm trying to put some research together before we set up meetings. But if you guys wanted to have, you know, a subcommittee or suggest people to group, I'm at the very beginning, so I'm totally open to suggestions.
Right. I might suggest putting together a group, advisory committee, whatever you want to call it, getting in touch with those consultants that have been through it before. I'll certainly volunteer for that. That have had success with it. I know that there was talk about keeping these only for type 2s, but if we're going to CUPs and subdivisions, then I'm sure that throws in a whole different set of issues associated with it, especially the uncertainty once you get to a hearing, and getting into a hearing within 60 days and still having the appeal period and everything else associated with it, too. So.
And those are definitely the ones that aren't working as well.
Right. I would maybe spearhead something like that, but to be completely honest, I just don't have time. I have time to meet, but not to organize. So I'll lend my support in meeting on something like that, but I think that needs to be done before going too much further with either expansion of the program or making it permanent or whatever it might be. I know other jurisdictions are touting, we'll get you through in 30 days, 45 days, 60 days is great. City of Vancouver's still at 90 days, and they're not budging. Sometimes we get through a little bit faster there, but that's only because it's a simple project. So I think we're ahead of the curve on that and at least moving in the right direction. So.
The other thing I really want to talk about is a lot of them have gone on hold. Out why,
okay.
And things that we can try to do to avoid that.
I asked the question. We haven't heard from you. You're on hold. You guys essentially have the same amount of time that it was on hold after it comes off hold. What are the issues? I've had some that have gone on hold. I can fill you in on the reasons why on our end, too. Then we had the plat alteration process. I know that this was kind of a hot topic that Eric was interested in. You've been kind of stretched thin, I think, a little bit with this stormwater stuff, and Jeff is maybe going to take over on that. Jeff, have you guys got anything together with regards to the plat alteration process? Or?
Yeah, but final plat?
Well, there's two of them. There's a final plat
alteration and
a final plat.
I'm getting mixed up. Let's just stick with plat alteration right now. That was the beginning.
Where is that one? I was looking for it.
I'm sorry. I'm on a separate list here. This was from last month's agenda.
Oh, okay. That's right.
And it should be. All of these should be on this list. I thought we put it on there. Maybe it didn't. It just never made it on there. Okay.
Either one of those was on there.
Yeah. Then then that needs to be added. And maybe this isn't the most current list.
That's kind of my thought.
I don't think this is the most current list. Well, let's run off this other list. Sorry, you guys don't have copies of it, and you don't have probably a copy of June's agenda that it's on there. But we've got plat alterations, and then it was the final plat process. So I think that from a plat alteration standpoint, is that something that you're following up on or that we need to maybe address later on this year?
You know, I think that's one that we need to put on here and maybe do later this year.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. There's been a lot of challenges in that process, I think, both staff and the community.
I haven't done enough to know, so yeah, that'd be great if you could do that. And then kind of along with that, then we have the final plat process that you're...
Yeah, Eric, I was talking coming in, but I think we're just due to schedule and I'll take the lead on that. Just send an email out and schedule a meeting to sit down and regroup at our last meeting, the county, the representatives are here. I was talking to Eric. We're kind of forgotten that there was even. We weren't even sure there was such a committee.
Oh, so okay.
Eric said there was.
There is, it's important.
There was. I think they just forgotten. But
yeah. Are we getting to?
We need to get the. We just need to get everyone in the room and get it started again.
So. Okay. Good.
So I think everyone's just been really busy. I think staff's been busy. Everyone here's been busy. And instead of having meetings about doing things, we're really trying to get the work done.
Sure. No, billable time is important. Okay, we talked about stormwater. One of the other items on here was permit consolidation. I'm not exactly sure what that is. We've talked about it before. And, anybody know what that means?
Permit consolidation. What was the beginning of it?
Permit consolidation.
It is on the list. It's like we talked about just how many permits are involved.
Kind of group them together.
Yeah. And that may have come, now that's ringing a bell, that may have come from Ott, maybe even a couple of years ago, when we talked about the building permit process, the different the number of different permits that you need to have as far as from a building standpoint. Is that ringing a bell?
I don't know. I seem to remember something about a room in his at one of the apartment complexes. Oh, and I was in there with one of
So, and just kind of going on that a little bit to remind us, is that, I mean, you need a building permit, a plumbing permit, a drywall permit, a chimney permit, a floor permit. You have to get a permit to put a light bulb in.
Permit, but
Kevin in your office could provide some good information.
I'll do some research, more research on that.
Yeah, that'd be great. Appreciate that. If that's something that we want to take up, and if there's a way that we can, you know, not have to get 9 permits for a building.
There's definitely room to address that and room for improvement. What really, I think, the low hanging fruit is on this whole thing is time.
Okay, time.
And whatever, the fewer the permits, of course, the less time. But time is money, and time is still economic development. To whatever extent we can lessen the time factor when a guy walks in the door or a gal walks in the door, and when they walk out the door,
right,
that means.
If you can provide some information on that also, meaning what you anticipate your timing being versus what it actually ends up being, would certainly be beneficial. And I'm going to kind of bring up something else that I was wanted to talk about here was also the fire marshal review. I've heard rumblings that since the fire marshal isn't under any required codification of the timeline or anything like that, that there's a little bit of a disconnect with regards to getting building permits reviewed, even engineering plans reviewed by the fire marshal in a timely manner, because there isn't a good dovetailing with that. I thought Tom Scott was in this building. I thought he dropped him off at his office and it was reviewed and it came back. But these may be on larger buildings too. Has anybody experienced anything like that from there, either from the building side or from the engineering side?
I'm not aware of anything, but okay. It's not
out
there.
Okay. We've been receiving updates on the fee holiday. That's the next item on the bullet list. Wait, let's back up here a sec. Could you come back maybe August, September with some information?
Of course.
Okay.
Look forward to some of your email.
Okay, that'd be great. And then we can discuss it internally then. Great. We'll just wait for something to come in and schedule it.
Okay.
Concurrency, we've been getting regular concurrency updates, so that's good. The final site plan, we had an update last month. Sounds like that's rolling fine. Fall biannuals, are those ongoing, Susan, right now?
We skipped spring, but we're coming back in fall.
Okay. And when do you anticipate we might be seeing those? I know it's, I don't know if it's premature. I know that we talked about in the group, if there's anything, just send their information to Jan if there's any questions.
Yeah, Jan continues to add things to the list right now. Usually he starts in like September.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we're premature here. Okay, we'll take that up later.
Impact fees.
Is that not in here?
Yeah,
we're
ahead now. Grading and erosion control and inspection fees. Sounds like we've got one of those items maybe resolved from a duplication standpoint. Eric, I know that you still wanted to take that up.
I think it's worth getting an update on how, maybe add that to one of the next few months when we have time.
Okay. Is that something that we need staff to chime in on, or is that something that we, as a group or an individual in the group, would be taking up?
I think it'd be both staff and the group.
Okay.
Yeah, so some examples from us.
Were they really spending staff on the raise?
Okay. I had a few examples. We had one where the erosion control inspection fee was a real small job. It was about twice what the actual work cost to do. And in those cases, it's out of line.
Okay.
On some real large jobs, it's not as big of an issue. It's absorbed. But it's on the fee structure. And duplication.
Have you been experiencing the same thing, Andrew?
I haven't looked super close at a lot of projects, but I think Eric's right. There's some base fee stuff that, regardless of the scale of the project, there is
are we looking for August? So, do you have anything?
I think we could certainly put that in August.
Okay. If we could maybe take that up in August and in the meantime reach out to staff and get their take on it. And if you guys could maybe take, you know, an hour or so and kind of go through and see and provide that information, similar to what I did with a small project within the Highway 99 Overlay District where the fees were more than what the design fees were. I think that's kind of where we're going here. The lien process, I think we're talking about the residential lien process. Is that still going fairly well, Susan, or is that a Chuck question?
It's kind of a Chuck question, but my understanding is it is going pretty well. It's more of a Chuck question. I don't know if we started with unplatted lots. That was the next.
With what?
Lots of record, not in subdivision.
Yeah, not a subdivision lot, but like a tax lot on the rural area.
Where you guys have to prepare a whole plan set for?
Yeah.
For stormwater.
Do you like that process?
I just recently went through something like that. No,
I had a weird situation at one of those where we prepared it because it was on the checklist. Yeah. And we turned it out at the counter and it said, "Oh, you don't need this in this case." And I was kind of shocked. I felt bad for my client because they spent a lot of money it. And it was all dispersion already. But I thought, if it's dispersion, you don't need it. So there's been a little inconsistency there. But
okay.
But.
Just to add to the mix, and I don't want to do a red herring at all here, but shoreline exemptions, those are pretty expensive to do. I just had a situation come up this week where
I would agree.
Advising a client to basically try to figure out a way not to have to do that, but $3,300 to get an answer to say you're exempt is a lot. And that may apply to residential as well as this is actually a utility issue.
I just had one that was residential, and I would agree.
Just as crazy. $3,300. I mean, there was a SEPA involved in that too, but yeah, it's, to get an answer to say you're exempt.
That's just going to cause people to commit crime.
Why? Because it's criminal?
I mean, it was like, yeah, I think we need to look at some of those things. Like shoreline revisions is another process. And again, I know these don't come up a lot, but residential lots are important as well. You may have part of the property in 200 feet. If you're not building any houses there, you've got to get a shoreline revision. It adds on to the subdivision cost. Everybody knows it's not impacting.
Okay.
So just,
Don, if you wouldn't mind putting something together on that, let us know if you'd be available maybe in August or September. You seem to have a really good, your arms around the shorelines and what the issues are associated with it. So, you are shorelines guy.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
The other item was staffing levels, making sure that with the upswing of activity that staff is maintaining levels and things are getting done in a timely manner and meeting timelines still.
We've hired several people in the building. We hired a couple of permit techs. We have a temp, and we have a couple of temps in the building. We have a temp in planning right now.
Oh, okay.
And we may be looking at a hire in planning with the next budget.
Okay.
For engineering,
Engineering, definitely looking at it. Probably looking at adding a staff, which would be a partnered position. I mean, meaning they would come into development engineering. We would use them significantly, of course, during our heavier season, spring, summer. Would be partnered probably with somebody or with our design group. They may, you know, and when we come down in the fall and winter. Have some time in design or programming, that sort of thing. So basically, probably would equate to about a 0.5 FTE over the year's time.
So looks like everybody's kind of...
We're looking at it for
good.
Sure.
Great. One of my pet peeves, permit center wait times. I don't know what's going on there, if anything, or if anything can be done. Susan, I brought this up before. My fallback is the time that I had to wait. No, I didn't have an appointment, but I came in and it was for an addressing submittal. 1 hour and 30 minutes. Wait. So, yes, I know that making the appointments, and Chuck's trying to get the word out about that. And I imagine it's probably a function of not having the staff there to be able to take people in. I know you guys have cross-trained so that everybody can take everything in, I think, pretty much. But I don't know what the wait times have been, and I know that Marty said that he could pull up all that information. I'd be interested in seeing that. Maybe next month, just, you know, kind of giving us an idea of what kind of wait times we're looking at, because I know that Commissioner Medora was touting, you know, walk through the door, don't stop, go directly in and submit. So,
Mike, was that before or after the expanded hours? I'm just curious.
Before. You know, I don't know.
Is that, I'm just wondering if that has changed now at all.
I think it was before, but
it'd be interesting.
I could find out.
Kind of counters an app that has a green light or a red light.
There's something on our website.
Really?
You can see the current permit. Yeah.
Great.
The current wait time before you leave your office.
It's on our
website. It's on the front page of the community development portion of the website.
Okay. And I know that this was something that Mike Bomar was you know, wanting to do, at least as far as increasing the use of available technology out there. Has staff talked any about electronic submittals at all? I know that there's a payment of the fee issue associated with that too, and I don't know how that all would fit in, but
well, and we're tying all of that to the time marking system.
Oh, okay.
So I mean, it's coming.
Okay.
It's, you know, I'm sure not as quick as any of us would like, but the time mark replacement will include electronic land review, and that will have workflows and ways for you to submit electronically, but it's part of that whole process.
Okay. Good. And how is that going?
It's moving along. We had demos from June, and they're trying to work towards a contract. So.
Okay.
And on Monday, we have a new staff member who will be in community development and leading that process.
Oh, good.
So we're all looking forward to that.
Perfect. Take a little bit off of your plate then. Good. And that's kind of was the next thing on your technology aspects. The county could utilize whether it's Skyping inspections and upgrades to the permit center. I think that ties kind of directly right in, but I know that, again, Mike was looking at the possibility of having inspectors have tablets on site to be able to look at on site stuff by somebody else sending stuff to them where they wouldn't necessarily need to be on site.
We're starting a Skype demo program.
Oh, good.
We are, yeah. For now, it's right now for re-inspections.
Uh huh.
And once again, I apologize, I would have the details, but
sure.
We're like getting ready to start that, so very soon. So it is in the works. The tablets, you know, the building inspectors have laptops in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, that's all wrapped up into the time marker placement, so that is, they will have better access. And we hope to have, you know, not that you care about animal control, but animal control, code enforcement, and our other programs having electronic access in the
Great. That was pretty much it on the list that we discussed last. Well, it must have been back in May about what we wanted to discuss this year. Sounds like we've got some people working on final plat process, the plat alteration process, Eric's ongoing with stormwater, if you could do some things on permit consolidation and timing, ongoing issues are updates to the fee holiday concurrency, final site plan, looks like biennials will be coming up this fall, grading erosion control fees and duplication of not only fees but of inspection too, right, by different agencies. Okay. Staffing levels seem to be staff seem to be taking care of those, and then permit center wait time. Looks like we might have enough then for August into September.
Very full.
Good. Was there anything else? That pretty much wraps up what I had for today. Before we go to public comments, does anybody else have any comments? No? Eric, thank you for your time today. Amy, excellent. Any public comment? None seen. We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Great meeting. Let's look at both August and September at the same time.
Okay, that's what I want to know. How many separate groups you want us to find a room? How many times a month?
Right. And see what staff we need to get involved with that. We want staff to find time to be sure. Everything, and I'm trying to get these guys, you know, involved in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds good. Thank you. Susan, thanks so much for coming today. Really
thanks
helpful.
Thanks for being so prepared.
Really helpful to have you here. So.
Oh, geez, Odin's asking questions.
Yes, there are no questions. You're the best kid.
You'll have to let Marty know what he missed.
I gave him a bit of a hard time. We talked about this yesterday afternoon, like right before he walked out the door. Okay. See ya.
Awesome. It's been fun to see.